are listening to Into the Comics Cave with your host, comic book heartthrob, Grant Stoy.
Hello, people of Earth and fellow humans alike. It's Grant. I'm still bad at openings. I'm sorry. But I'm very excited to have our guest today because he's been gracious enough to reschedule like 15 times, give or take, due to all sorts of horrible illnesses. But still, I have a writer of Damsel in Distress and Bette Noir, one of my favorite Kickstarters of this past year. We have Andrew Clemson. Andrew, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, no problem. And it also must be said that now you are dealing with sick family members.
Yeah, I don't think anything serious. I think it's just one of the many bugs they get from school. They just run around in the classroom licking everything, I think, and it comes back. So I've got probably a 48-hour countdown till I get it as well. So it's good. You can't reschedule again.
But don't you love that ticking time bomb of kids' illnesses?
Sometimes you avoid it, and it's always the best thing about it is you don't know whether you had it first or whether you're just waiting for the next thing. So there's a constant like leapfrogging of school illnesses going around. But hopefully I've had this one.
And before you know it, you're just trading it around like Pokemon cards.
Yeah, exactly. Don't know what's going on anymore. Just going around licking everything. Everyone.
Well, Andrew, I've got you here, and I just want to know, whereabouts did you grow up?
I'm from the UK, and we are from a town called Crawley, which is it's sort of two major London airports, London Heathrow, London Gatwick. Crawley is sort of the little feeder town to Gatwick Airport. So obviously everyone in my family is like airline in some shape or form, except me. I didn't want the well-paid job and the benefits, but everyone else is. So we were there, and you know, my dad joined Emirates Airline when they started that, and then we got flown out to Dubai, and that's where I spent the rest of my sort of formative years was here, and now I'm back because it's a bit like. The best way I can describe it, it's kind of like that Godfather line where you get out and they find a way to drag you back in, and that's this sort of town. You know, you go to the rest of the world and you always find yourself dragged back over for one reason or another. But yeah, it's a great town. It's a fantastic town to be in, especially at the minute. You know, we were able to pretty much do whatever we want. You know, there were rules in place, and it's safe with everything that's going on and everything. So yeah, good town.
Yeah, and you say your formative years. I'm wondering, like, what about in Dubai were you doing that made an impression on you?
Not a lot. At the minute, obviously everyone thinks of it now and it's all futuristic, right? And, you know, it's kind of like this sort of Blade Runner thing in the desert. And there's, you know, money is a wonderful thing. So you can invest in a lot of cool stuff, right? But back in the day, it was literally just like a little place in the middle of the desert. So you get up to all the sort of teenage hijinks you can get up to everywhere else, but with it's just a bit harder to get some booze if you want it back in the day. But it was a great place to grow up. As my class at school, high school, I think they were like, I want to say like 12 or 13 kids in it, and everyone was from a different country. So it's that, and it's the same. My son is at school now, and it's literally everyone in the class is from a different place. So it's a great place to grow up, at least when, you know, from my experience.
That's such an interesting thing to have such a melting pot of diversity, like in such a small classroom.
Yeah, I mean, now it's a bigger place now. I think that, you know, the population sort of boomed, the expat community, and, you know, the people that come into work and stuff, it's just skyrocketed. But back when I was here, there was only a couple of schools, and there was, you know, there wasn't as many people, but, you know, now there's a lot more. So there's a lot more schools pop up. You have an American school and a British school and a, you know, international baccalaureate school and a blah, 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 all these sort of things. So it's pretty cool. And you know, even now as an adult working, you're meeting people from all different kinds of, you know, nationalities and cultures, and it's a great place.
Oh yeah, for sure. And what kind of like media and arts were you into as a kid?
As a kid, it's going to be the boring answer, and I'm just going to say I was into comics. Like that was the thing. Yeah, and it was the you know, films and stuff like that. We used to have a thriving pirating industry here, like video piracy.
Because
my dad came over before I did, and did you know, me and my brother were very young, so he came over and did a stint on his own to test the waters, and then brought the family over. And he came back with like just like a small suitcase full of like dodgy pirated VHS tapes, because what they used to have here was you used to go down to it's on the creek, I guess, so one of the souk type places, and they'd have a big shop, like, you know, sign, it's got a proper neon sign outside, it used to say Thompson Electronics, and you'd go in there and it would be like a Blockbuster Video, but for pirated videos. So you'd be this is the newest thing. And they'd have like, I don't know, what are those, 8x10, like, you know, that standard sort of printed photos you used to get from like photo service. They'd have a photograph they'd taken in the lobby of the movie poster, and they'd stick that picture onto like the standard tapes you would buy in a shop and record, you know, telly, TV stuff. But it needed sort of stereotypical, you know, people coughing and there's a head popping up and down at the front of the thing and all this kind of stuff. So until I was at university and I got like a DVD of Jurassic Park, I thought it was this terrible film that was all like dark and grainy and like you couldn't hear things. Because that was when I'd watched this one pirated video for like years and years and years and over and again. But so we used to have that. But then comics wise, you could get them in the shops, but it was that classic thing of like you'd get X-Men 250 and then you'd get X-Men 258. And then you get X-Men, you know, you wouldn't get anything in a row. So I was picking up whatever I could get, and not even worth anything now because they've got the supermarket sticker like stuck on the middle of the front
Isn't
of the page and
lovely?
Stuff. Yeah, I mean, at the time, I didn't care. And, you know, those ones, they're so battered from me reading them so much. They were anyway. But I used to, I had a very understanding nan, a grandma, who for Christmas used to just get me subscriptions. So what I'd do is I would get a, pretty much how we used to get, because we only had local TV, you know, like pre-satellite and everything. We used to get like a sort of cardboard box shipped out with a load of recorded VHSs from the UK with the sort of soap operas from my mom and all this kind of stuff. And I would get sort of 6 months worth of comics. I'd have like five or six series that I'd been subscribed to, and I'd get them in these sort of biannual chunks. So I'd get all these, you know, West Coast Avengers and X-Men and all that kind of stuff. And I'd just get a huge sort of, you know, like sort of early binging of these books. but that was my thing. And obviously, because it was a smaller thing, I think it was only like maybe one or two other people that used to read books, you know, comic books that I knew. But obviously now, even the guys I knew back then who didn't read, now, obviously they've watched the films and they're all into it and all that kind of nonsense. But yeah, it was you had to sort of hunt for them. And I think that's something I miss now. Like I used to go back in the summer and go to like car boot sales and flea markets and stuff. And, you know, you're finding all these old books and stuff. And I think you can't really do that anymore because, you know, everyone is sort of aware of the perceived value of them and stuff. But, you know, that was one of my favorite things growing up, just finding, you know, someone's tattered old collection and just, you know, rambling through it.
Yeah, you're definitely right. There's something to say about that loss of the treasure hunter mentality. Like going to flea markets and going to garage sales, and just when you strike gold, it means so much more.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, I have one of these things. I wake up in the middle of the night, you know, in a cold sweat sometimes. I remember as a kid finding just a box of old comics, and I was going through them, and I was never into like DC for some reason. I just never, it never never caught the bug as much as I did with Marvel books. So I didn't really pick them up as much. You know, you're a kid, you've got a finite amount of money, you buy what you want to get. And I remember going to a car boot sale, and there was a load of books, and I bought some, you know, to this day, worthless sort of reprint editions. They were like the, is it Marvel Tales? Like the sort of reprinted Spider-Man and stuff. But I picked all them, and I must have bought about 50 of these things, you know, just, and I was, you know, super proud of myself. I remember there was a copy of that Flash, I think it's Flash 123, where there's like two of them running towards them.
No.
And this was like late 90s, and it was 10p, which I think is like 15 cents or something. And I just think that was probably worth more than, you know, the whole box combined.
Oh my gosh.
Little things, but that's the fun, isn't it? You know, you find those gems and, you know, buy what you're into.
Well, yeah, and that's totally, like, you're buying these things to read. Like, at the time when you're a kid, you just want to, like, devour them. If the Flash isn't your thing, you're like, why would I buy that?
Yeah, I've still got some of them from when I was a kid, though. You know, I very quickly got into the sort of bagging and boarding and all that kind of stuff. And I go through long boxes now, and I find the... can I swear on this one?
Oh, absolutely.
We keep it again.
Fuck yeah.
So I find the real piece of shit that I've, you know, like Image books from the 90s where I've sort of carefully slotted them in, and they've, you know, they're all in mint condition. And I find these Marvel books, which are now worth a fortune, but I've left them loose, there's a cover missing, and I've, you know, read it to death and stuff. So kids don't know what they're doing. It's a lesson. Yeah. They don't know. They haven't got a clue when it comes to valuables and collectibles.
Oh, yeah.
That's my lesson
and
for today.
When did you start trying your hand at writing comics? Were you a prose person first, or?
No, I to this day write anything pretty much, but prose in particular. I've never been able to get past that stereotypical stage that most people get to, where they think when I write a novel, they get about, you know, 5 to 10 chapters in, and then it gets abandoned, and you move on to the next thing for whatever reason. And I've probably got, you know, on a hard drive, you know, 6 or 7 novels that I've, you know, tried to write. But I think that's why the comic stuff took off, because it's much easier to sort of focus on it. It's a shorter format. You can get it done. You can finish it. You can take a break, or you can move on to something else and stuff like that. And about, I think it was 2015, a friend of mine from high school over here had passed away. And I had one of those sort of bucket list things where I was like, ah, you know, shit, if I get hit by a car tomorrow, what do I want to do? And it was comics. And I'd almost gone to university, weirdly, in America, this Savannah College of Art and Design.
Yeah.
I'd been over for like a tour, and I'd met all the teachers and stuff, and I ended up not doing it, which I always regretted. So I thought, you know, I'll give this a hand. At that point, I wanted to be an artist. But, you know, again, like many things, I'd given that up and, you know, was not a passable artist, should we call it. So I sort of threw my hand into writing. And the first thing I did was Bête Noire, which we started to put out
really
last year, I think it was. Yeah. At the time, it was I thought I was Frank Miller, and I was writing, you know, the next sort of Dark Knight Returns, or the next Alan Moore writing Watchmen or something. So I'd done this big sprawling epic that was going to be, you know, multiple volumes. I sort of quickly got bored of that, and I moved it up to another thing, and I did a book called Star Bastard, which was a sort of parody of 90s machismo sort of space books. And that sort of took off, and that was my foot in the door. And after that, I met some people in, you know, in the writing scene in the UK, and I met an editor called Matt Hardy, who came on board with Bête Noire, and we reshaped it, and it became a new book. So it went from like 100 issue thing down to 6 issues.
And probably for the best. For it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Like, did you have aspirations to write as a kid?
Not to write. I always sort of liked reading. I was always sitting in a corner reading a book type kid, you know, rubbish at sports, you know, but never really thought, I always thought I was going to be an artist. Like at school, like, I focused on art, and, you know, all my art projects, everyone else was, you know, doing still life and stuff. And I remember for my GCSEs, I did like an Andy Warhol sort of recreation of the cover of Sword of Ale. It's like, okay. It's covered, it's like a joke side of thing that jumps down. That was like it when I was a teenager.
Oh, absolutely.
And I did a whole recreation of that because I was convinced I was going to be a comic book artist. But then, like I said, I almost went to the States. In the end, I went and did animation in the UK. And that very quickly, I mean, it was, you know, pre-CGI and everything. And it very quickly, the act of simplifying things down and repeating them multiple times, very quickly, I lost any interest in that. And I moved over to sort of traditional filmmaking. So that's when I sort of, you know, found the writing when I was working in that stuff.
That's fascinating. It takes such a twisty road to get to writing.
Yeah, it's like an early midlife crisis, I guess. but yeah, fun. It's fun and very, very slightly cheaper than a sports car.
Oh my gosh, yes. And also buying one pencil is much cheaper than buying like a whole array of colored pencils and like charcoals and pastels.
I still bought all that crap though. I have a thing still like sitting in the back of my mind, like, oh, I'm not terrible. I could still do like sketches on the blanks and stuff. And I spent far too much money on like a little, like a wallet of Copic markers and things.
Yeah.
Which I probably have like open the plastic on about three of them, so that was a complete waste of money. But yeah, it's much cheaper to just you know, open up Pages or Final Draft and just hammer out some stories until you've got to pay for it.
Yeah, man, so you have all this stuff and you have artistic ability, but you just don't feel moved to just even doodle in your spare time?
No, I'm one of those people, like, if it's not perfect, I hate it 100%. So I'll look at something. It's kind of like, you know, doing these books, like, you want to find the best people. And if you could sort of do something passably, it's better to just pay a professional that knows what they're doing to make the thing good, you know? So, I've got no aspirations of drawing, you know, anything professionally. But maybe, you know, I suppose they're not going to keep, but, you know, maybe when I'm old and retired, I'll pick it up and be a super late bloomer. Who knows? There might be a demand for terrible, terrible artists.
Hey, terrible art is coming back in style. Now's the time.
I'm in. I'm going to be rich.
Hello there. My name is Don Cardenas, and I'm here to invite you to check out my podcast, the 2021 Granty Award-winning Comics Coffee Metal, where I interview creatives in, around, and about the worlds of, you guessed it, comics, coffee, and metal. I've already had such amazing guests on my show, including, but not limited to, Liana Kangas, Mike Norton, John O'Diener, Michael Conrad, Sophie Campbell, Guitar Max Carlisle, Andrew Baina, and of course, the Word Bros themselves, Bob and Kevin. Comics Coffee Metal is available on all the major podcast services, and you can find it directly at comicscoffeemetal.com. I hope to see you there, and now I return you to Into the Comics Cave with the amazing, awesome, talented, tall, handsome, what else did I say? Definitely over 6 feet tall, smells good like lavender and motorcycle grease. Is that right? Motorcycle grease? All right. Grant Stoy. There, I said it. Get my money now.
So I got a scenario for you. You are at the local farmer's market and you're trying to find a very specific type of watermelon seed. And you're looking and you're looking and you come across this one booth run by a very elderly woman. And she says, of course, because that's how it works. Yeah. And she says, you look like you're looking for a special type of seed. And of course you say, yes, I am. And she offers you a seed in a large oak box. She says, if you plant this seed, a tree will bloom in 3 days. In 4 days, it will start to bear fruit. But the fruit are all babies. Infant human children. Would you plant this seed?
That sounds like a terrible terrible plant to plant. I don't know. There are people out there that, as someone with young kids, you know, those kids have to go somewhere. And there are people out there that desperately want kids. But I do not, as much as I love my kids, a tree full of kids. So I don't think I'd plant it. Unless I had a...
I was going to say, this lady could just be a raving lunatic.
Yeah, she could be a raving lunatic, but what is the... I mean, how quickly does the thing grow as well? Does it immediately just punch up?
3 days, supposed to grow 3 days, into a tree.
You still got to wait 3 days. And what, you have to be in communication with this woman who could just be nuts for 3 days. I think I would move on. and maybe you'd quickly Google like the local sort of mental health professionals and call them up. It's a nice hypothetical, like maybe someone wants one of these babies, but I just think it's much more likely that it's just a lunatic running around. Keep her busy until the people in their white coats arrive. I think that's the best thing to do for everyone involved.
You got 3 days when it blooms, but the fourth day is the fruit. So if it blooms on the third day, you could say, this is insane, and you can cut it down before anything happens.
That's a bit dark, though. I don't know, because then that's real sort of deep ethics dilemma of like, okay, oh, no. Well, she said it's going to grow babies. So it still might not grow babies, but...
If I chop it down now, moral quandary.
Yeah, exactly. I think better off just cutting it off at the root to you know, continue on your thing and just assume she's nuts and ignorance bliss, they say in nature.
And go along your way, find that watermelon seed that you've been finding for.
Yeah, exactly. I just, you know, get it from a reputable source. Get one where you can leave feedback. You know, you could probably get this stuff on Amazon.
I bet you could find a baby tree seed on Amazon.
You probably could. Whether you would, what's that terrible word? Wish. You know, where you order something and you get a terrible copy of it from China. I dread to think. It sounds like something you would get from Wish.
It actually grows into a giant baby that produces trees. Yeah.
It's a baby, yeah. It's like a giant baby that grows trees all over it. Or like that one out of the Avengers where... Who is it? Scarlet Witch has babies for arms. Oh no!
Oh my gosh!
The other guy, isn't it?
That is from an old Avengers West Coast thing, isn't it?
Is it Master Pandemonium? Is that the guy's name?
Yes.
It's like the guy, puts the babies on his arms, and he's like running around. I'm pretty sure it's Alan Davis who can't. Oh no! Is it John Byrne? That's it. Sorry, I almost said a bad word about Alan Davis, which.
Oh God forbid! No.
Recant. Yeah, no. But John Byrne, yeah, we can do that.
Oh, shit! Yeah, he definitely.
He definitely can't draw babies. He can draw a lot of stuff. And definitely not babies for arms.
This is a really stupid tangent, but I actually have one Avengers West Coast comic. It's an annual, and they talk about that particular scene that you just mentioned. It's one-off just panel mention of it. So that is hilarious that you mentioned that.
I mean, you'd have to, really, wouldn't you? Like, if you lived in a world where someone you knew had someone come at them with their babies on their arms, that would come up all the time, wouldn't it? You'd be talking to everyone on the bus.
You'd be right next to the old lady in the farmer's market with the baby seed saying, you will not.
Yeah, well, we wouldn't. We'd be together in the mental hospital, you know, and they're going, yes, dear, we believe you. Good God. It'd be like, Matt, you'd be in a job interview and they'd be like, what's the weirdest thing you've ever seen? And you'd have to think like, well, it was this one time. Do I bring this up? Probably not.
I imagine what would happen is you'd say, have you ever seen a person with baby arms? And they'd say, like, yeah, you'd say, no, no.
Yeah. Because that would be fine. That would be fine. No, you'd have to just sort of pivot and go, well, I had an egg with two yolks in it this morning. That was pretty crazy.
Say, that's weird. You're hired.
Yeah. Uh-oh. I thought it was going to be another one about baby arms. Thank God for that. Everyone else today has been talking about baby trees.
Okay, now I'm composed. Andrew, I'm about to hit you with 5 questions that we ask every guest that appears on the show. They're derived from James Lipton's Inside the Actor's Studio. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm fully prepared.
Number 1, what is your favorite sequential art sound effect?
I mean, I like, there's a lot of the classics, like BAMF is good, and you know, you got Snicked and Thwip and all that kind of stuff. I like the stupid ones. Like there's a pound, I don't know what it's from, and I'm not entirely sure it's real, but there's one, it gets shared a lot in like British, you know, groups, but there's a Captain America, and I think the character, it's an Iron Man baddie. Is it the controller? He's got like discs that he puts on people. Anyway, it's Captain America. And he's like throwing his shield at this guy. It's him in the face. And it just says, wank. Which to us, probably funnier than it is to Americans. But it's like this just giant wank on the front. So it's like a meme thing that gets shared around. But it's, you know, other than that, there's like, what's another good one? Like Thoom. And something real, like someone's punched something really hard and it just goes boom. That's a real good sound. So I'll have 2. I have a serious one and wank.
How many O's are you going to put in Zoom if it's in one of your books?
I think it would be, it would be 2, maybe 3 at a push. I think if it's too long, then it's sort of, it's an awkwardly long thing, and you'd have people sitting around sort of, wow, this is taking a while. So two thooms, or maybe a K at the beginning, kathoom, like depending on what's hit what. Yeah. No, it doesn't work as well as wank. But then they're 2 different effects. The other one I like is when like they shoot something or something hits metal and it says like ping, like this.
Yeah.
Ping, like those ones I like as well.
Oh, yeah. And number 2, what is something you love about sequential art?
I like you can dwell on it. Double-edged sword from 2 different angles, but I like that you can turn a page and it's all timed and you can read them in different paces. You know, you could read it one way and you get one thing out of it. You can read it at another speed, you get another thing out of it. You can stop and take in a panel, and you can, you know, quickly skip through a bunch of panels. You know, if you're watching a film, that's dictated to you. But you know, I'm a very quick reader. Like I speed read a lot of stuff, so I will be guilty of, you know, poor artists have spent hours and hours drawing this thing, and I'll read the whole book in a few minutes, you know, skimming through, and then you stop on a page if there's something to take in or dialogue. But you know, I think that's cool that you can choose how quick to read these things, and you can, you know, different people will use different tricks to make you dwell on certain things.
Yeah, absolutely. And on the other side of the coin, what is something about sequential art that you dislike?
I mean, it's the boring answer, but it's maybe not boring, but like the fandom that comes around comics in particular and media now, like, you know, years ago we would, you know, hang around in comic shops and stuff and argue about XYZ and all this kind of stuff. But now, I mean, there was a thread, I think, on Twitter today about like someone slagging off the new Spider-Man thing, and it, you know, they're relaunching this. Do they not understand Spider-Man? They must really hate Spider-Man and all this kind of stuff. Like, it's just unnecessary ownership of something which is just there for enjoyment. You know, there's a team, they've got lives, they get on. And Liam Sharp put a thing up today saying, you know, there are people behind these books. You know, like, they put their heart and souls into it. And you get these people that are sort of angry because it doesn't go their way on social media. I think that's the worst thing about it. I think if people could detach themselves, see it as a piece of entertainment, then everyone would be able to enjoy everything, you know, and you'd probably get different work because people would be worried about, you know, how people are going to take this and take that and stuff. So I think I think sort of toxic fandom is the worst thing about the medium. I think we get it worse than anything else.
Absolutely agree. Especially if you think about it, if they just let that stuff go, you know, they'd actually be happier too.
I don't know, like, I cannot engage with, I just don't have the time to engage with anything really. And I don't understand how other people do. Like, it's just, I didn't like it, move on. Like, that's simple as that. You'll have a nicer day and you'll probably enjoy the thing that you hate, you know, you say you don't like a bit more in the future.
Yeah. Number three, I like asking this question of parents because they usually have a standby. What is your favorite swear word that's not actually a swear word?
I'm not very good at stopping. I like swearing. Okay. I find it quite therapeutic and I enjoy good usage of swear words. So I've had a few, not as many as some of my son's friends, but like, you know, there's been a few instances where he's repeated things. There was one time when he was younger, he loves Hot Wheels and things like that. And he was sort of going, and this is this car, and it, like all their names and the Lightning McQueens, all this kind of stuff. And he goes, that's that one, that's what, and that's that bloody white car that always parks in dad's spot outside. And I was like, oh, okay. Just pick that up. But luckily, he never picked up any of the real colourful ones, unlike some of his friends. But my favourite, I think if I had to say my favourite swear word, which doesn't really count, again, I think calling someone a bellend is the absolute best. Yeah. And you can lean into it. It can be jovial. You can say, oh, you're such a bellend. Or you can say, you fucking bellend. Like, it just means you're a bit of a dickhead. And it's the same, literally the same meaning as dickhead, bellend. But it's so specific to the UK. I've walked around in the States just saying it to everyone. No one gets what you're saying. So I think that's a fantastic swear word. I have to say, I do like, and this is without context, this sounds terrible, but I like the C word for its impact. I don't like that people use it for that impact, but it's a lot of swear words have been watered down, you know, to the point where you could say it to your mum and dad pretty much, but that one, you're gonna get clipped around the ear if you say that one to your mum and dad. So that keeps your impact. It was really, you know, someone's crashing into the back of your car, you can drop that one.
And it's like being slapped in the face with a word.
Yeah, exactly. And it's weird, like in the UK, and in particular, Australians use that one as a term of endearment. Like, that's like, you know, saying, oh, you're right, mate. You're right, buddy. They drop that word. And it's just so casual. But I'm a fan of swearing. But, you know, you've got to use it in the right way.
Oh, absolutely. We're all fans of swearing here around these parts. Starting. But I got some bad news for you.
Oh, no.
So you are tooling around in front of your house. And you see a penny roll into the street. You're really excited because it's shining in the midday sun. You lean over to get it, and you look up to your left, and this bloody white car comes and rolls you right over. And I hate to say it, but you have died right there on the street underneath the wheels of this white car that's taking your spot.
Was it the man and lady driving it as well? Because I didn't leave her at the flea market. Jeez.
The odds of that are astronomical.
I know, it's just mental.
But the good news is, you go to what we perceive as heaven. You get there, you're about to enter the pearly gates, and you look over to your side. You see a very curmudgeonly older man sitting at a drafting table. He doesn't know whether to gnaw on his pencil or the cigar. And it's Jacob Kurtzberg, a.k.a. Jack Kirby. The grandfather of modern comics. What do you hope he says to you?
I would, first of all, I'd ask why he wasn't inside the gates. Like, why have they decided that he has to stay at the front? Because I'm pretty sure he wouldn't enjoy that. I would just hope, like, I think he just, I'd wanted to ask, like, you know, did you enjoy yourself? Like, what you wanted to do? Did you focus on the right things? And I hope he agreed that, you know, the stuff I'd done was the right stuff, you know, that you'd focus on the right stuff. You produced stuff which was enjoyable. People enjoyed your work. You know, I think that's what he was a very, you know, from what I've read, he was a very opinionated man. So I think he'd appreciate people who stuck to their guns and got the stuff done that they wanted to do.
Yeah, that's a beautiful sentiment. And Andrew, thank you so much for joining me. Where can folks find you on the socials?
Unless it all shuts down because it's been bought by the Tesla geezer today, I'm on Twitter. That's just my name, at Andrew Clemson. That's the one I do. I have Instagram and all that kind of stuff. I don't do it very well. I have kids. I have to sort of schedule everything. I sort of look at my phone, get angry for 2 minutes and turn it on, you know, throw it away again. So that one, that's where I'll be shamelessly promoting Kickstarter for the next month. I have a website, which is clemsoncomics.com. Again, I never update it, but it's there. There's some stuff on it. It's probably like 2 years out of date, but you know, I will. I have to do that this summer, is update that thing. But the best thing is Twitter. That's just my name.
And it's funny that you mention Kickstarter. Well, what you got going on?
So in 2 days from recording, in Wednesday, the 27th of April, we're doing the last two issues of Damsel from Distress, which is the first volume of Damsel from Distress, which is a sort of mashup, Man from Uncle James Bond meets Zelda, Dungeons and Dragons, all that kind of stuff. It's a sort of very light-hearted comedy action book, and it's done surprisingly well for the last few that we've put out. So we're hoping we can ride that and fund the last couple, and get, you know, a nice shiny little hardback version out sometime after this. Ooh. But first we've got to fund the singles and, you know, get the thing to exist. But yeah, that'll launch on the 27th, which is 2 days from now, and it'll run for about a month. Yeah, it'd be great if people could check it out. We have another few issues of Bet Noir. We're sort of retooling that. That we were going to put on. So we're sort of retooling everything, getting more work done, and then that'll go on that platform sort of in the near future.
Right on. Well, dude, thank you again so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
This has been a Comic Book Yeti production. You can find new episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and anywhere podcasts stream. For more information on the Comic Book Yeti, please visit comicbookyeti.com. And for more of Grant, visit grantstoy.com or on Twitter @grantandstuff.